Now, the Saturday Morning Update.
Good morning. It is the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler. A very happy Valentine's weekend to you and President's Day weekend. Luke Grooms is behind the console this morning. Jane Houghton and our producer. You may know the saying, it all comes out in the wash. Well, it is all coming out in the wash this weekend for Governor Cuomo in New York. Big problems with the way they counted COVID deaths. It's all coming out in the wash for the Lincoln Project. Headline at Politico, the Lincoln Project implodes amid infighting and scandal. And it's all coming out in the wash for the Democratic prosecution in the impeachment trial of former President Trump. As the Republican defense team, those defending the former president yesterday, laid out their arguments. And they are scheduled for 2 hours of closing arguments today on each side, and then the likelihood of a vote to take place today. So where do we begin? I would say we begin in New York with Governor Cuomo, because this is a story that will be ongoing. Theoretically, the impeachment story will end later today, and that will be in the rearview mirror. But it will be the days, weeks, and months ahead as things unfold in the city of New York and the state of New York. Now, what's this all about? You may have heard it. You may not have heard all the details. Well, there was a conference call that the governor's secretary, Melissa DeRosa, was on. She was speaking on the call, and here's how the New York Post summed it up in a headline. Cuomo aide Melissa DeRosa admits they hid nursing home data so feds wouldn't find out. COVID-19 deaths in New York nursing homes were 50% higher than claimed. So what happened? There was a video conference call with state Democratic leaders. On the call, she said the Cuomo administration had rebuffed a legislative request for the tally in August because, quote, right around the same time, then-President Trump started tweeting that we killed everyone in nursing homes. She said Trump directs the Department of Justice to do an investigation into us, and basically we froze. She goes on, because then we were in a position where we weren't sure if what we were going to give the Department of Justice or what we give to you guys, what we start saying was going to be used against us while we weren't sure if there was going to be an investigation. That played a very large role into this. She continued, so we do apologize. I do understand the position that you were put in. I know that's not fair. It was not our intention to put you in that political position with Republicans. She tried to walk that back yesterday, but the cat was out of the bag. It didn't go over too well with a number of Democrats in New York. Assembly Health Committee Chairman Richard Gottfried, a Democrat from Manhattan, rejected her expression of remorse. He said, quote, I don't have enough time today to explain all the reasons why I don't give that any credit at all. State Senate Aging Committee Chairwoman Rachel May, a Democrat from Syracuse, also ripped into DeRosa, said her former opponent had launched another broadside earlier in the day. And the issue for me, the biggest issue of all, was feeling like I needed to defend or at least not attack an administration that was appearing to be covering something up. Well, it got even more interesting. Last night on Tucker Carlson's show, he did an interview with a Democratic city councilman in New York. And I thought this was a very interesting conversation. This is Richard Holden speaking last night. He's, again, a Democratic councilman in the city of New York.
Well, he's made all the wrong moves so far. And, 36,700 people have lost their lives in New York State. And he's taking victory laps. And he's a self-promoter. He's got a book, which should be
right,
fiction
do you have
now.
What is it, Rick Wilson or?
Fiction section. Because he's lied all the way through. He's covered up so many things, including probably 6,000, 7,000 deaths. of seniors that he forced into COVID-positive seniors, forced into nursing homes, and then wondered why so many people were dying. It spread like wildfire in the nursing homes. And then he denies it. He blames everybody else for it. They lie. They even admitted that they lied because they were afraid of a lawsuit by the Justice Department for mishandling the nursing home situation. So, my God, can you? I can't believe this guy. And such arrogance. And he goes on his brother's show. He tells all the great things he's done. What has he done that's great except lie to people? He should be investigated, and he should be called to task on this.
Jake Tapper at CNN tweeting yesterday, quote, "The story keeps getting worse for Andrew Cuomo on COVID-19. So that one's coming out in the wash for Governor Cuomo in New York. Now let's turn to the Lincoln Project. We'll go to the New York Times. This is quoting the New York Times article. "The crisis engulfing the anti-Trump group, the Lincoln Project, deepened on Friday when Steve Schmidt, a co-founder, resigned abruptly from the board and former employees renewed demands to be released from non-disclosure agreements in order to provide more information about the organization's handling of harassment allegations against another co-founder, John Weaver. Further controversy erupted late Thursday night when the Lincoln Project posted screenshots from Jennifer Horn's Twitter account revealing her direct messages with a reporter and then quickly took them down. Unauthorized access of a social media account can be illegal depending on the circumstances." You're familiar with the Lincoln Project. You've seen the commercials. Very divisive commercials, attack ads that were used against President Trump at the time during the campaign. Since the campaign, they've continued with attacks on Josh Hawley, Ted Cruz, and Senator Lindsey Graham, among others. Now, where the story gets even more interesting is this is the Associated Press report. Since its creation, the Lincoln Project has raised $90 million, but only about a third of the money, roughly $27 million, directly paid for advertisements that aired on broadcast and cable or appeared online during the 2020 campaign. So they've raised $90 million, $27 million goes into advertisements. Now, continuing with the AP story, quote, "That leaves tens of millions of dollars that went toward expenses like production costs, overhead, and exorbitant consulting fees collected by members of the group. The vast majority of the cash was split among consulting firms controlled by its founders, including about $27 million paid to a small firm controlled by one member, and another $21 million paid to a boutique firm run by former Lincoln Project member Ron Steslow. That according to campaign finance disclosures. Stuart Stevens is a senior advisor to the Lincoln Project. He tweeted last week, "We are constructing a database of Trump officials and staff that will detail their roles in the Trump administration and track where they are now. No personal info, only professional, but they will be held accountable and not allowed to pretend they were not involved." Well, now the members of the Lincoln Project will be held accountable and not allowed to pretend they were not involved. 60 Minutes did a glowing segment on the Lincoln Project last year. I wonder if they will do a follow-up. 6:17, it is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. We go to the WMAL Traffic Center. Michelle Murray is there this morning.
So far, traffic is moving without delay on the Capitol Beltway throughout Maryland and Virginia. On the outer loop at Georgia Avenue, you will find some road work closing down the left lane, but that is not causing delays at this time. On the outer loop at the off-ramp to go on to 66 westbound, the right lane on that ramp is closed, so do watch out for that as well. In the district, keep in mind the Suitland Parkway is closed in both directions again this weekend between South Capitol Street and First Sterling Avenue for construction, but detours are posted. And in Langley Park, watch out for the long-term road work on Westbound University Boulevard, Toon Ridge Road, and Piney Branch Road. Now from GarageDoryPair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Another weekend, another winter weather alert. Today, freezing rain and sleet are the primary concerns, with anywhere from a light glaze north to over a quarter of an inch south. Temperatures all day will stay at or below freezing, and any melting will be brief. Expect the slick precip to go on and off all day, with the heaviest and most widespread icing in the afternoon and evening hours. Dry but cloudy and cool tomorrow, with highs around 40. I'm ABC 7 meteorologist Rachel Kay with the Stormwatch 7 weather team.
28 degrees in the nation's capital on WMAL at 618.
105.9 FM.
Let's go with number three to start.
When Washington comes to talk.
It is the Saturday morning update, and it all comes out in the wash. It will come out in the wash more today in the impeachment trial that has been held in the Senate this week. We saw several days of the Democrats' presentation of the prosecution. It was the Republicans' turn yesterday to address those claims made by Democrats. And if you've seen much of this, you've probably seen the videos that the Democrats presented and produced. And we'll get into those in just a second. The Republican defense got off to a bit of a rough start on Wednesday in the opening arguments for President Trump's legal defense team. However, a much stronger performance yesterday. I believe most people would agree to that, and we'll have comments from Ron Johnson shortly on that. But to give you an example of some of the things that they were looking at to have to kind of walk back the Democrats' attempts to put this out to the American public. So as an example, here's one example of the manipulation of some of the videos that were presented, and I think you'll find this interesting.
But they manipulated his words. You will see where they stopped it, and to give it a very different meaning from the meaning it has in full context. Let's watch.
You have to get your people to fight. He told them.
You have to get your people to fight. And if they don't fight, we have to primary the hell out of the ones that don't fight. You primary them. We're gonna let you know who they are. I could already tell you, frankly.
So what they did is they cut the video right where he said fight. They didn't add the part where he talked about primarying them out. And that was one of the big complaints, was the manipulation of the video. And we're going to talk to Jim Trusty, our legal counsel, later on this morning about the way that evidence was presented, because had that been in a court of law, that probably would have not been admissible the way those videos were edited. But we'll talk with Jim a little later on about that. More on the evidence. This is the attorney for the defense. This is David Schoen talking about evidence.
Even last year's impeachment followed committee hearings and months of examination and investigation by the House. Here, President Trump and his counsel were given no opportunity to review evidence or question its propriety. The rush to judgment for a snap impeachment in this case was just one example of the denial of due process. Another, perhaps even more vitally significant example, was the denial of any opportunity ever to test the integrity of the evidence offered against Donald J. Trump in a proceeding seeking to bar him from ever holding public office again, and that seeks to disenfranchise some 75 million voters, American voters.
And argument against the rhetoric. This is how the attorneys lay out how they addressed the Democratic claims of President Trump's rhetoric.
No human being seriously believes that the use of such metaphorical terminology is incitement to political violence. While the president did not engage in any language of incitement, there are numerous officials in Washington who have indeed used profoundly reckless, dangerous, and inflammatory rhetoric in recent years. The entire Democratic Party and national news media spent the last 4 years repeating, without any evidence, that the 2016 election had been hacked. and falsely and absurdly claimed the President of the United States was a Russian spy. Speaker Pelosi herself said that the 2016 election was hijacked and that Congress has a duty to protect our democracy. She also called the president an imposter and a traitor, and recently referred to her colleagues in the House as the enemy within.
Another of the interesting developments was the presentation of unseen video. This is previously unseen video. It was hyped up almost like a mini-series or something. And some questions proposed by the Republican defense attorney, David Schoen, about that unseen video.
Countless news outlets repeated the Democrat talking point about the power of never-before-seen footage. Let me ask you this. Why was this footage never seen before? Shouldn't the subject of an impeachment trial, this impeachment trial, President Trump, have the right to see the so-called new evidence against him? More importantly, the riot and the attack on this very building was a major event that shocked and impacted all Americans. Shouldn't the American people have seen this footage as soon as it was available? For what possible reason did the House managers withhold it from the American people and President Trump's lawyers? For political gain? How did they get it? How were they the ones releasing it? It is evidence in hundreds of pending criminal cases against the rioters. Why was it not released through law enforcement or the Department of Justice? Is it the result of a rushed snap impeachment for political gain without due process?
There was a lot of conversation on the defense side about the notion of President Trump claiming the election was stolen and how his claims were so extreme that that's what incited the mob. And the Republican defense presented what I thought was a pretty good video compilation of how the Democrats talked about the stolen election in 2016. And it starts off with Senator Sherrod Brown. You'll recognize voices in here. Stacey Abrams is in there. Hillary Clinton is in here. So quite a few voices that you'll recognize. But this was the video presentation that the defense put together.
If Stacey Abrams doesn't win in Georgia, they stole it. It's clear. It's clear. And I say that publicly. It's clear.
You can run the best campaign. You can even become the nominee. And you can have the election stolen from you.
He knows he's an illegitimate president. He knows. He knows that there were a bunch of different reasons why the election turned out the way it did.
Votes remain to be counted. There are voices that were waiting to be heard.
And I will not concede.
Respect, and I respect where you're coming from, and I respect the issues that you're raising. You're not answering the question. Do you think it was... You're not using the word legitimate.
There are still legitimate concerns over the integrity of our elections and of ensuring the principle of one person, one vote.
I agree with tens of millions of Americans who are very worried that when they cast the ballot on an electronic voting machine, that there is no paper trail to record that vote.
But constantly shifting vote tallies in Ohio and malfunctioning electronic machines, which may not have paper receipts, have led to additional loss of confidence by the public. This is their only opportunity to have this debate while the country is listening, and it is appropriate to do so.
So those were the Democrats in 2016. One clip in there from 2005 of Nancy Pelosi. But I thought a very effective pushback from the defense team for former President Trump, and kind of summed it up in this clip from Michael Vanderveen, one of the attorneys for former President Trump.
3 minute stations, the speech 3 minutes to your next Fox News 30:30.
The use of violence, in other words, it has to be in the words itself, which is clearly it's not in the words itself. That's step one. They don't get past it. Two, the speaker intends that his speech will result in use of violence or lawless action. There's no evidence of that, and it's ludicrous to believe that that would be true.
Third, the imminent use of violence or lawless action is likely to result in speech. Also, they fail on all three points of the law as we know it and needs to be applied here.
So that's kind of a summary of the Republican defense. So how did all this go over with Republican senators? Because obviously they need to get 17 senators to convict. Well, here's how Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin reacted after yesterday's hearing.
I think the president's lawyers blew the House manager case out of the water.
Two minutes to your next Fox News 30:30.
They showed the distortions of the tweets. The selective editing showed the reason why due process is important. And they certainly proved that the First Amendment applies to political speech probably more than anything. So, again, I think the president's lawyers just blew the House manager case out of the water.
Well, if that's any indication of how the vote will go, well, there you go. It's 6:28. It's the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. And, of course, we've got our team coming up. We'll talk with Jennifer Harper, our legal counsel, Jim Trusty, John Gizzi from Newsmax, Cheryl Atkinson, KT McFarland, and Tony Schaefer, all on the way here on WMAL.
Okay, parachutes ready.
Boy, the things I go through to get auto loan rates as low as 1.39% APR on new vehicles with PenFed.
You are aware that you don't have to be a military member to save hundreds on your auto loan, aren't you? Anyone can join PenFed.
As someone terrified of heights, I probably
1 minute stations.
Probably
1 minute to your next Fox News 30:30.
PenFed Credit Union. Visit PenFed.org/autos or call 1-800-247-5626. Advertised rates available through the PenFed car buying service. To receive any advertised product, you must become a member of PenFed, insured by NCUA.
Heard the good news about COVID-19 vaccines? They're here. But you can do more than wait for your turn. See, you have the power to help slow the spread. Actually, you could be a real difference maker and protect your family and loved ones, too. Here's how. Watch your distance. Stay at least 6 feet away from folks you don't live with. And it's risky to be indoors with them, too, no matter how far apart you are. And, of course, avoid crowds. Also, wear a mask. CDC reports that masks protect both the person wearing them and the folks around them from particles that carry the virus. And wash your hands, using soap and water for 20 seconds, and do it frequently. Watch your distance, wear a mask, and wash your hands.
Fox News, I'm Karen McHugh. The second impeachment trial of former President Trump resumes at 10 a.m., and it could end today as well.
Could vote this afternoon on whether former President Trump is guilty or not guilty of inciting an insurrection.
This attack, as we said, didn't come from one random speech, and it didn't happen by accident.
Texas Democrat Joaquin Castro and House managers are trying to link Trump's refusal to accept election results to the Capitol breach as Congress certified the Electoral College. A link former President Trump's attorney Michael Vanderveen says
the suggestion is patently absurd on its face.
Both sides are expected to make their closing statements today.
Fox's Jared Halpern. New Orleans police warning that large crowds will not be tolerated this final weekend before Mardi Gras over fears of spreading the coronavirus. America is listening to Fox News.
But wait, now there's iLottery from the D.C. Lottery. It's easier than ever to play. With iLottery, fun is at your fingertips. You can play on your phone, your tablet, even your smart TV. Never seen that before. Play at DCIlottery.com.
Let me tell you about something called the One Subject Plan. If you have a son in middle or high school, you want to hear this. Vince Colonnais here. And I've been telling you about Fork Union Military Academy for a while now. But one of the best things about Fork Union is the One Subject Plan. You see, in most schools, students juggle 4 to 6 classes every single day. 45 minutes of math, maybe, or 45 minutes of science. You get the picture. At Fork Union, they divide the school year up into 5 grading terms of about 7 weeks each. Each grading term, the student takes one class with just one teacher. The student focuses on that one class all day, every day, for the whole term. The One Subject Plan immerses students in each of their subjects. Concentration goes up, learning goes up, grades go up. It really works. You can learn more about this by going to onesubjectplan.com. That's onesubjectplan.com.
I like a bed that's really firm.
I need something a little softer than that.
Rest easy. With the Sleep Number 360 Smart Bed, you can both adjust your comfort with your sleep number setting.
Can it really help me fall asleep faster?
Yes, by gently warming your feet.
Okay, but can it help keep us asleep?
It senses your movements and automatically adjusts to keep you effortlessly comfortable. Sleep Number, proven quality sleep is life-changing sleep. Don't miss our President's Day weekend special. Save 50% on the Sleep Number 360 Limited Edition Smart Bed. Plus, special financing and free premium delivery when you add a base. Ends Monday. Special financing subject to credit approval. Minimum monthly payments required. See store for details.
When you're running a business, you don't have time to worry about slow internet or confusing cybersecurity. So get fast, reliable internet from Comcast Business on the network that can deliver gig speeds to the most businesses. You can add the advanced security of Comcast Business Security Edge to help eliminate threats. And enjoy the peace of mind that comes with knowing 24/7 support is just a phone call away. It's internet and advanced security made simple, so you can bounce forward with Comcast Business. Help your business to bounce forward with this amazing offer. Get started with 100 megabits per second internet and Comcast Business Security Edge for just $79.99 a month for 24 months with a 3-year agreement. Plus, get a $200 prepaid card when you switch today. Call 1-800-501-6000 to learn more. Offer ends 2/28. Restrictions apply. New Comcast Business customers only. Enrollment and eco bill and auto pay required. Early termination fee applies. Equipment, installation, taxes, and fees extra. Subject to change. New Comcast Business 100 megabits per second internet and Comcast Business Security Edge customers only. Call for details.
Whether you're buying a home or trying to lower your interest rate, finding the right mortgage company is often stressful and time-consuming. Listen this Saturday to the Mortgage Radio Show at 1 p.m. and now on Sunday at 3 p.m. The Mortgage Radio Show is your trusted source for mortgage news. Every weekend, host Teresa Strasser and Sean Metter will give you helpful tools for finding the right mortgage product to fit your needs. So tune into WMAL every Saturday at 1 p.m. or Sunday at 3 p.m. for the latest rates and information from Network Capital Funding here on WMAL.
6:34, time for a traffic and weather check with Michelle Murray in the WMAL Traffic Center.
So far, no delays to report on the major interstates. However, some icy conditions starting to be reported in parts of Maryland and Virginia, especially if you're traveling in the Fredericksburg area. So do use extra caution and try to avoid unnecessary travel. Getting reports of some accident activity right now on Clopper Road near Matany Road, so use caution there. Traveling on the Beltway in Silver Spring on the outer loop at Georgia Avenue. Right now, the left lane is blocked with construction, but so far that is not causing delays. And do watch out for the long-term road work right now. Traveling on the Suitland Parkway, a portion of that is closed between South Capitol Street and Firth Sterling Avenue in Southeast, but detours are posted. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Stormwatch 7 is on weather alert again today for an ice storm across the DMV. Light freezing rain and possibly sleet is expected south this morning, and while we may see some dry breaks, the system will nudge north this afternoon and evening. Temperatures will stay at or below 32 and hold relatively steady tonight. Valentine's Day Sunday looks dry but cloudy and just a touch warmer with highs near 40. I'm ABC7 meteorologist Rachel Kay with the Stormwatch 7 weather team.
28 degrees at 6:36 on the Saturday morning update on WMAL. It's the Saturday morning update. A happy Valentine's weekend and President's Day weekend. Nice long holiday. We're joined by Jennifer Harper. Thank you for being with us.
Good morning, everybody.
And, of course, Jennifer writes Inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. You know, we've seen a lot in the news this week about President Trump, the impeachment trial. And the question would be, I guess, you know, how are Republicans feeling about themselves these days?
Well, you know, Rick, it looks like the Grand Old Party is not quite so grand these days because approval ratings of the Republican Party have taken a big hit since the November election. And the greatest drop, Rick, has occurred among Republicans themselves. This is calling to according to our friends over at Gallup. Here's what they have to say. Following the election, the GOP enjoyed a 90% favorability rating among Republicans, and that approval rating has now dropped to 78%. That's a big, big, big drop. And even a third of independents gave the Republican Party a thumbs up at election time, and that has dropped down to 32%. And among Democrats, 9% approved of Republicans, and it's actually gone up a percentage point since the poll that was taken in November. So it's an odd thing. And according to Gallup analyst Jeffrey Jones, he says, with much of the decline in Republican Party favorability coming from Republicans themselves, the GOP faces a crossroads as it decides whether to continue to be loyal to Trump his political style and his favorite policy positions or break with him. And currently, 60% of Republicans and Republican-leaning independents say they want Trump to continue to lead the party, while 38% would prefer a new leader. That sounds like a lot of conflicting numbers out there, but I think people have a lot of conflicting feelings, and they're mad at the Republican Party. But on the other hand, quite a few still are looking to Trump, so that's something to think about. The admiration for Trump as a policy leader and so forth and so on has not gone away quite completely.
Well, there could be some conflicting feelings about President Biden. You know, there's always the talk of a honeymoon. Sometimes it's the first 3 months or so. What are you seeing?
Well, this was just one of a couple of reports this week, because I had to ask in the Beltway, gee, is the honeymoon already over? Because it was none other than CNN primetime anchor Jake Tapper. And he pointed out that President Biden is now, quote, backtracking on his pledge to get American children back to their schools during the first 100 days of his administration. And of course, the GOP people are watching this very carefully, and they say, why haven't any House Democrats followed the science and spoken out against Joe Biden's broken promise? Because, like Biden, they aren't willing to say or do anything to side with health officials when they're in conflict with the teachers' union. This is coming from Mike Berg. He's Deputy Communications Director over the Republican Congressional Committee, the National Republican Congressional Committee. And Tommy Pigott, he's the Rapid Response Director for the Republican National Committee, and he's now tracking the negative coverage of Mr. Biden's kind of wobbly policy about the kids getting back to school. And some of the adjectives used in the media coverage were pathetic and slippery. The Associated Press noted that the Biden administration has caught some real criticism on this issue. The Wall Street Journal declared that teachers' union have rolled over Biden, and Politico cited a big Biden backtrack on school opening. So that's kind of indicating to me that the honeymoon, didn't last a whole lot, particularly with this issue.
We know that former President Trump spent a lot of time watching the news on television. What's our sense of whether President Biden is tuned into the impeachment proceedings?
Well, a lot of people got a kick out of that, this particular issue this week, because President Biden is not watching the trial proceedings. I repeat, he is not, and the White House is being very open about that. And they came up at the press conference with Jen Psaki, Press Secretary Jen Psaki, this week. And they said, is Biden watching the trial? And this is her reply. He's not a pundit. He's not going to opine on the back-and-forth arguments, nor is he watching them. And she was very direct about that. And she also mentioned that he's focused on delivering his promise to the American people. He would stay in contact with House Speaker Pelosi and Senate Majority Leader Schumer. And the president also was very clear about this, because inquisitive reporters, of course, have to ask all over again whether or not he was watching the trial. And he simply said, I am not. And, if there's not a ready answer, the news media will often kind of supply a few themselves, or at least comment on it. And according to a couple of the news organizations, the Voice of America said the White House is distancing Biden from the Trump impeachment trial, while the New York Post proclaimed Biden refused to comment. So interesting decision. But, you know, to their credit, they were open about it. Biden's not watching the trial.
So in the week ahead, we expect President Biden will be introducing his new immigration plan on Capitol Hill. Border policy and immigration policy has been a tough one. Does anybody have a good idea out there?
Yeah, I think somebody does have a pretty simple and sensible idea, and this is coming from Dan Stein. He is president of the Federation for American Immigration Reform. That's a nonpartisan public interest group, and he's referring to President Biden's plans as America Last immigration policy. But moving right along, Mr. Stein says that according to their count, the number of illegal immigrants in the U.S. now stands at 14.5 million. And this is an increase that's been driven, he says, by the Biden's administration replacing the immigration policies and promises of amnesty and public benefits for newcomers. So, you know, they can't wait to get up here. But Mr. Stein has a very interesting idea. He says American families have been put into lockdown for nearly a year now, hoping for a return to normalcy. It's also important to note that both the Centers for Disease Control and the World Health Organization are discouraging traveling during the pandemic. Those seeking admission as asylum seekers in the U.S. should be asked to remain in place until this health crisis ends, and it's soon to claim 500,000 American lives, he says. And when you think about it, that might be a good justification for just staying in place for now because of the pandemic. So it was something to think about.
Most of the polls that we've talked about have been generally not real positive about how Americans are feeling. Do you have any good news for a change, or is it the same old story?
No, I have some very good news this morning. And, you know, I'm always knee-deep in polls, but this is a very good one coming from the American Enterprise Institute. They have the Survey Center for American Life, and they have revealed some sort of very astonishing sentiments about America from Americans, and I'm just going to reach at the numbers here. 73% of U.S. adults believe that the U.S. has always been a force for good in the world. 69% agree that American democracy serves the interests of only the wealthy and powerful. 62% say they are proud to be an American. 53% say the world would be much better off if more countries adopted American values and the American way of life. 48% believe the political system is stacked against conservatives and people with traditional values. And last but not least, certainly, 45% believe that God has granted this country a special role in human history. Yeah, this is coming from the American Enterprise Institute's Survey Center for American Life, and it was a survey of 2,000 U.S. adults conducted January 21 through 30. It's very current, but I thought some of those findings, you haven't heard that kind of stuff in quite a while.
Jennifer Harper, inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. You have a wonderful Valentine's weekend. Thanks for being with us, as always.
My pleasure. Happy Valentine's Day, everybody.
6:45 on the Saturday Morning Update. We'll talk to Jim Trusty next. But first, we head to the WMAL Traffic Center. Michelle Murray is there this morning.
In Germantown, an accident now being reported on Clopper Road near Mataney Road, so use some caution there. And in Woodbridge, there is an accident now reported on the Prince William Parkway near Wellington Road, both sides of the roadway affected by that incident. Also, on the outer loop at Georgia Avenue, there is a work zone there in the left lane to be aware of. So far, that is not causing delays. And in the district, Illinois Avenue remains closed between Gallatin Street and Hamilton Street Northwest due to water main repairs. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
A winter weather advisory and ice storm warning are in place for central and southern parts of the DMV all day today. Ice storm warnings are fairly rare and indicate a high confidence of freezing rain with accumulation around a quarter of an inch. The icy precipitation will be on and off, with most widespread activity in the afternoon and evening. We may start off slick again tomorrow, but highs around 40 will allow for melting before our next wintry mix arrives Monday. I'm ABC 7 meteorologist Rachel Kay with the Stormwatch 7 weather team.
28 degrees in the nation's capital, 6:46 on WMAL. It's the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler, and if you did not spend the better part of your week watching the impeachment hearings in the U.S. Senate, Jim Trusty did. He is with us this morning. He is a partner at IFRA Law here in Washington. He is the former chief of the organized crime and gang section at the U.S. Department of Justice. Jim, it's great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
You saw the prosecution, you saw the defense, and first off, if you could summarize what you saw in the prosecution's presentation as the highlights.
Sure. Well, I think, you know, it's not unusual for prosecutors to try to play up an emotional theme. I mean, you know, I certainly did it as a prosecutor, and there was a lot of that here. There was a lot of emotionalism, and they were, you know, clearly making a play on that, and part of the new trick of the trade is to use videos. And so early and often, the House managers were using videos to kind of make their point, you know, to wed words from President Trump to actions over on the Capitol. Now, there's a lot to talk about there. It might be an unfair wedding, but that was the intention there. I think it was, you know, the advocacy is fine. There's a lot of folks that have experience as litigators that, you know, they're professional politicians. So you didn't see, you know, abjectly poor performances from kind of a theatrical or from an advocacy point of view. There was a couple of points that I thought were interesting that were made during the week by various pundits. Andy McCarthy, who's a regular contributor on Fox, made one point that I'm still chewing on, which is that if Officer Sicknick from the Capitol Police was killed by the mob, which is certainly how the allegations have started, it's a very bizarre fact that the prosecution wouldn't make that the centerpiece of their emotional argument, that they wouldn't really make that kind of the central figure of their arguments here. And they didn't by a long shot. And I think that touches on the problem with snap impeachments, that we don't really have complete evidence. But I guess the other thing I would say about the prosecution's presentation was that they gave a lot of context. You know, they gave a lot of, let's talk about what happened a month before, a year before, a week before. And in my mind, when you talk about incitement to insurrection, that's really a concession of weakness. If the words were enough to establish the crime, you don't need to go back a month, a week, a year, and talk about what Trump must have meant. And that's kind of the central flaw, although they danced around it nicely in their presentation.
They used the word reports a lot and quoted reports and reportedly. And I believe the defense was pretty good at saying when you use terms like reports or reportedly, it means you don't have the evidence. That was one complaint of the defense. So, Jim, is that a valid counter to the prosecution?
Yeah, it is. I don't think it's the central point of this. I mean, I think it weaves into the idea that there's just nothing remotely recognizable about this impeachment proceeding compared to normal litigation. But one of the phrases in the impeachment article is that President Trump reportedly acted in a cavalier or excited way when he heard about what was happening at the Capitol. And this is an anonymous source New York Times article being put in an article of impeachment. And you know, the contrast between anonymous New York Times stories and actual evidence, admissible evidence in typical trials, is pretty striking. So it's a fair point among many about how this was such an unusual kind of proceeding.
And what about the quotes that they attributed to many of those who had been arrested who said, well, President Trump told us to do this. We were following his direction, following his lead. How admissible would that be in a court?
Well, it's a great question. I mean, it probably wouldn't be for a variety of reasons. I mean, you're starting off with hearsay. The hearsay exception that you would try to use if you were the proponent of those statements would be, well, no, it's a statement in furtherance of a conspiracy. Well, you have to establish a conspiracy to get statements in. So, you know, what I look at is that it's really just another incident of kind of selective usage. You know, they're taking things that were shouted out of a bullhorn by one person and using it as evidence of Trump's complicity. And it's a very, obviously, it's a stretch. It's an attenuated piece of evidence. But it goes to the fact that there is still this active investigation going on to what happened on Capitol Hill that we still don't have all the information. And certainly all the information wasn't shared with the defense team. So, you know, to selectively pull out a comment like that and use it as substantive evidence here is, again, foreign to people that are used to working in regular courthouses.
So we saw a motion, we saw videos, and the defense had to respond on Friday. What were the highlights of the president's defense team?
Well, you know, when the defense had their first opportunity to address the Senate, it didn't start off all that great. I think it's kind of universal that people think that Mr. Castor's opening was a little weak. And, you know, look, there's a lot of armchair lawyering out there, and I hate to see people piling on. But he had a very folksy approach, a very conciliatory approach, and it wasn't really the right tone for this type of proceeding under these circumstances. And so it started off weak. I think David Schoen kind of saved the afternoon in those opening statements that had to do with jurisdiction. He had a much more passionate and kind of clearer argument. The closing arguments that we had yesterday were considerably more powerful. And, of course, it's a little bit of a Rorschach test, right? I mean, the people that are predisposed to say Trump is evil have said, oh, his lawyers are terrible and they were crushed. And, of course, if you feel strongly on the other side, you think, you know, maybe the lawyers were fantastic. I try to be objective about it, and I have to say that I think that they had some good moments. I mean, they pointed out what the actual First Amendment law is when it comes to incitement. They talked about something that I think is just a cardinal sin of any litigator. They pointed out that there was selective editing, that the prosecution team was leaving out key words that President Trump made. And in a normal litigation circumstance, that's devastating. When a prosecutor gets discovered as holding back on the full story, that case is lost 9 times out of 10 or more. So, you know, they exposed hypocrisy when it comes to Democrats using incendiary language, but the dishonesty in the presentation by the Swalwells, by the Raskins, that's actually a much more devastating thing if you have open-minded jurors, which, of course, is a huge if here.
What you're saying, in a court of law, had somebody edited the videos the way they did the Trump videos and cut sentences and cut the context, that would not go over well with the judge?
There would be real issues about the admissibility of that exhibit, because if you doctor it to kind of exclude important information, that's a problem. And by the way, keep in mind, the Republican side, the Trump defense team, you know, added a musical soundtrack to their video. So everybody's guilty of having a little bit of a Hollywood bug here. But when you talk about, you know, a prosecutor proving a case to impartial jurors, if it's determined that the prosecutor's not being honest, it's devastating. No matter what the evidence is, it's kind of a devastating result usually. So that's what I'm getting at. The defense was very good at pulling together actual evidence of what President Trump said and showing that they had been misleading in the presentation by the House managers.
So the big question now, Jim, as the senators will evaluate this today, was the prosecution able to prove what they charged? And along the same lines, how did the senators evaluate whether they proved what they charged when you're not under the same rules as you would be in a court of law? In other words, what are the ground rules for what's admissible, what's not, and what you base a decision on?
Right. Those are great questions. I mean, apparently everything is admissible. So there's no, you know, you didn't hear an objection during the proceeding. So everything goes. I think what you're going to see, at least from the Republican side of the aisle, is probably an acknowledgement that, you know, maybe the House managers proved negligence, or maybe they proved some sort of recklessness. There's a lot of focus on his reaction after the riot and a lot of proof that the riot was going to happen no matter what the president said, that there was a lot of pre-planning. So in a sense, they proved negligence but not an intentional crime. And to fair-minded jurors, that should mean it's a not guilty or, you know, not removed. Here, you know, it's hard to know. I mean, there was even an open comment by one of the defense attorneys about, you know, the burden of proof should be beyond a reasonable doubt. There's not even a consensus on what standard they're operating under. Is it a preponderance of evidence or beyond a reasonable doubt? So ultimately, in a political process, the politicians get to, quote, vote their conscience. I think we're going to see that break down on party lines, not coincidentally. But there's not a lot of ground rules and not a lot of help coming from Judge Leahy.
Well, you alluded to the fact that not a lot of the information has even been fully investigated yet. And what about witnesses and the whole notion of due process? There was no testimony from witnesses. It was just a lot of hearsay.
Yeah, this is really the horrible legacy of this particular proceeding, because I don't think that President Trump is going to be, you know, disqualified from running for office again. So the practical result that the Democrats were seeking, I think, is going to disappear. The precedent of having an impeachment top to bottom that takes place just about a month after the underlying activity, he was impeached a week after the riot, where evidence is still being developed, where information hasn't been shared, where not even a single witness has given any form of testimony. I mean, those are horrible precedents in terms of not tracking the consistency and fair process that we expect in important matters.
And one more note on evidence, Jim. There was the presentation of never-before-seen video, seen for the first time in the hearing. How did you feel about that as a prosecutor, that this video footage, the security footage from the Capitol cameras, it had never been released to the media, never been released to the public prior to the prosecution presenting it?
Well, it reminded me of a couple of things. You know, the whole process of litigation, whether it's criminal or civil, involves discovery, where we have trials where you're supposed to have notice and preparation time for the other side. So these kind of out-of-the-blue videos, you know, beg the question, was there any sort of discovery in play? And there wasn't. And also, what do we not know about? What are the videos they looked at and said, no, let's not use that one, let's use this one? So it's a scary scene that you have so much evidence that was not used or used selectively and not shared. It doesn't bode for a reliable result, no matter who you're pulling for.
Jim Trusty, partner at IFRA Law here in Washington. And since we now have an impeachment trial about every 6 months or so, Jim, people know who to call. Thank you.
Can't wait. Thanks.
6:58 Saturday morning update, WMAL, 7 o'clock news next. Then we're back with John Gizzi, Cheryl Atkison, Tony Schaefer, and KT McFarland.
Hear that? Let me give it to you one more time. That's the sound of Xfinity XFi blocking a threat to your home Wi-Fi network. It keeps your connected devices protected, from security cams to smart speakers. It even protects you from sites that aren't secure. Click here for authentic Bigfoot photos. Seriously, Karen? Xfinity XFi keeps your network safe, so you don't have to worry about a thing. Karen, we've been over this. Sasquatch is not living in Tampa.
Get protection for your connected devices included at no extra cost. Can your internet do that? Get started with Xfinity Internet for $39.99 a month for 12 months with no term contract required. And get advanced security free with the XFi Gateway. Just activate through the Xfinity app. Plus, ask how you can save on wireless when you add Xfinity Mobile. Go to Xfinity.com, call 1-800-XFINITY, or visit a store today. Requires paperless billing and autopay. Ends 3/21/21. Restrictions apply. New Performance Pro Internet customers only. Equipment, taxes, and fees extra and subject to change. After promo, regular rates apply.
What's keeping you up at night? For many baby boomers, it's questions about retirement. Hi, I'm Abe Abish, founder of Abish Financial Services, and along with my team, I want to help you rest easier by providing useful knowledge to address the concerns you have now while offering ideas on ways you can work to achieve your financial goals in the years ahead. Join me here on WMAL, Saturday afternoon at 2 for Retirement Key Radio, and connect anytime at retirementkeyradio.com.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. Now, more than ever, depend on 105.9 FM WMAL, a Cumulus station.